Welcome to Transforming Medical Communications, a podcast by MedComms experts. We share medical communications insights and advice from the best and brightest in the industry to find out what they're doing to push our industry forward. Here's your host, Wesley Portages.
Welcome to the Transforming Medical Communications podcast. I'm your host, Wesley Portages, and with me today is Amanda Borrow. Amanda is an Associate Director of Publications and Communications at the Global Medical Affairs team of Daiichi Sankyo. She has a PhD in integrative neuroscience and has taken that much-needed scientific expertise into the world of medical communications. Important research needs optimized communication strategies, and this is what Amanda has been dedicated to over the past couple of years. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Maybe to kick off this podcast today, could you tell us a little bit more about your journey from studying psychology and behavioral neuroscience to actually ending up in medical communications?
Sure. I don't think my journey is particularly unique. So I started out on the academic route, went through the PhD process, and went on to do a postdoc. Somewhere along the way, I realized that I didn't really want to pursue a career in academia. And I started to consider what other options were out there for somebody with my background and took a look at what I was interested in. And I was lucky enough to have the opportunity. This was as part of a Young Investigator Award that I received as a postdoc to spearhead the development of a review article with authors who were professors from various institutions globally. And that process was really eye-opening for me. I was coming from the position of being a postdoc working with these esteemed researchers and sort of guiding them through the process of developing a review article. Everyone had very different backgrounds. So putting together something that was maybe a little bit outside of their comfort zone in terms of writing, but that would be a very cohesive piece at the end and the end result, the review article went on to be one of the most viewed in that journal's history for that time period, and everyone was really happy with the results. So I took away from that, I really enjoyed the experience of working collaboratively on a process like that, and that brought me into medical communications. So started out on the agency side as a medical writer, moved up to become an associate medical director, and then in 2021, I joined Daiichi Sankyo, working from a different perspective in my current role as an associate director of publications and scientific communication.
Excellent. I'm actually intrigued by your title because it's both publications and scientific communications, and I don't see that often combined. So could you tell maybe a little bit more about how the reality of that looks like?
Yes. I mean, that was something that really intrigued me about the position, honestly. I like to have the opportunity to work across a few different areas in medical affairs. So I'll say that maybe 60% of my time is dedicated to publications, but I spend a fair bit of my time also working on the communication side, a lot of maybe more internally facing medical education documents, but some external as well. And also there's a component of my job that involves engagement with key external experts or healthcare professionals.
Exciting. Well, we're going to delve deeper into that a little bit later. First, I wanted to ask you something about a volunteer position you have held for the evidence aid during COVID. And I think it became really clear that the speed that was demanded in order to inform people properly on what was actually really happening, that it became really clear that it was actually hard to make that happen. And I'm assuming that you have learned a lot during your time helping out there. And I was wondering if this informed maybe anything in your role in the industry as well.
So I was really grateful to have the opportunity to volunteer for Evidence Aid. I think wanting to do something during the peak of COVID, helping out in any way that I could, it was a wonderful opportunity to be able to contribute my medical writing background. And the goal of Evidence Aid is really to bring scientific information, publications to a broader audience. I think one of our main audiences were healthcare professionals, decision makers, policy makers in developing countries who may not have had access to publications because they were behind paywalls or maybe didn't have the scientific background to be able to understand the details of the study and the important takeaways. So it was a really wonderful opportunity to work on developing my ability to write from more of a lay perspective and to see the statistics on how many people were being reached, and really drove home to me how important open access is and how we as an industry really need to do more to make sure that scientific publications, you know, data are reaching as many as possible.
So from what I hear, was the focus perhaps on like plain language summaries or those kind of things?
Yes. And it sort of spanned, I mean, from very technical to maybe more of like public health, epidemiological type of studies. Yeah.
Nice. Well, great that you did that. Definitely think it was very important during that time. Now, maybe circling back to a previous topic around your position being spread across publications and medical communications. I think that's very intriguing because in my field, when I communicate with a lot of different industry companies, and I am often kind of surprised by how much siloing there still is within medical affairs between the different functions. But ultimately, we're kind of moving towards a situation where the need for HCPs really is to be properly informed in any different way possible. But also, when you think about things like omnichannel, it's important there's a consistent message and that everything is kind of in tune with each other. So I'm wondering, like, you covering both of those areas, how are you maybe leveraging this to communicate around or about the publications also in different ways?
Yeah, I think the particular team that I work on is smaller, so I do have the opportunity to kind of work across both areas. I know that in some companies, these would be really separate divisions, but it's nice having the ability, I think, to bring our messaging, our thinking across both areas from having that personal, direct interaction with both types of content.
So I actually want to talk a little bit about publication extenders. And especially because I know you're deeply involved in the publication side with working with authors. And I was kind of wondering, what is the attitude and view of authors towards publication extenders in your perspective?
Sure. So speaking with some of our authors, I think that there's an overall feeling, and again, this is just the authors that I've interacted with. I can't speak for all authors everywhere, but I think there's a general feeling that they are positive, that this is something that audiences like to see, that there is value in them. At least the physicians that I have spoken with see them maybe more as like a nice to have at times rather than an essential. So I think there's an opportunity there to share with them maybe some statistics about how valuable they actually are to see if we can standardize their use more.
Yeah. If you think about it, these authors are typically also practicing physicians themselves. So they are both the creators and the consumers of similar content. Do you ever see like maybe a proactive stance from authors towards publication extenders, or like them bringing up proactively ideas on how this could be further shared?
Personally, I have not. Typically, I'd say our team has taken more of the initiative, or I think it's now becoming really more common for some journals to even require a graphical abstract. So I haven't personally experienced anyone reaching out and saying, please, let's create a video abstract or something like that. But I mean, I think we're still a little bit early in this process of really standardizing their use. So I'm sure there'll be lots of change with the coming few years.
I was just thinking this is kind of a very spontaneous idea that came up. But like, since they're both the producers and the consumers of content, they would maybe be a perfect group of stakeholders to also ask, like, how do you normally consume content? Or, well, that wouldn't be the exact question, right? But we could create some questions around that to figure out what they actually need. And in two episodes ago, I interviewed Dr. Proven. He's a KOL. And I kind of took that stance, right? It was like just asking questions around, like, what kind of information do you get from pharma? And what do you think about it? What stood out to you? What was good? What wasn't so good, right? And I think it's good practice to ask more questions to our actual audience. And this is a great opportunity. And in that same podcast, I asked him, like, how often are you being asked for feedback on communication materials by pharma? And he is basically semi-retired, but this is the first time I've never had the question. But I think when it comes to understanding stakeholder needs, what we're always saying to actually follow through on that this would be a fantastic opportunity. It was just an idea.
No, I completely agree with you. Yes, absolutely.
So you were just talking about graphical abstracts. What kind of extenders have you experienced with, and how do you feel about them?
So I'd say over the past few years, we've rolled out an enhanced poster format, trying to approximate more of that poster 2.0. I mean, just to try to get information across to Congress attendees and maybe a more user-friendly format, and introduce the use of QR codes as well on posters. We are working, a personal mission of mine, to standardize the use of graphical abstracts. And I mean, I do want to increase the usage of language summaries. That's definitely on my wish list. We're also looking into an internal hub to store extenders publications. And I'm working on also a social media program as well. So yes, that's something that I'm also very interested in and currently working on developing a program for our publications.
Very exciting. So what have you seen so far that you feel really yielded the best results? Let's imagine you're meeting a colleague at a conference at ISMAP or MAPS or something, right? That hasn't started out with extenders yet, no experience, and they ask you what you would recommend. What would you say?
I think graphical abstracts would certainly be a very easy, I think they're probably for many a first step into the world of extenders. So I would suggest that absolutely as a place to start.
Yeah, I think the visual aspect is generally underestimated in our industry. And we often still think it's all about making things look nice. I saw a really interesting presentation some time ago around visual language. And it was really about like how people in general, not just HCPs, but anyone, how they consume content or how they go about. And basically, the presenter, Chris Butler, he said that people typically don't read. Like 80% doesn't read, really. We are all kind of hardwired almost to scan content. So it's like heuristic scanning. And it kind of means that you don't really go into detail, but there's two questions you want to get answered. It's like, is this for me and am I at the right place? And that means if you optimize your materials for that scanning, you make it easier for the audience to switch from scanning to reading. Because the scanning is just meant, like when you go to a website or something and you just quickly check, well, that is the scanning part. And then if you immediately see like, oh yeah, this is where I need to be, then you start reading. And I found that really interesting. And you can do that by applying really well thought out visual design.
That's a really good thought. And yeah, absolutely. I've thought about how when, and I'm sure many in the industry have the same experience, when you're reading a scientific document, when you scan it, you're really trying to focus in on certain keywords and you can skip over things that you're familiar with, but you give a certain way of trying to absorb that information. And then when you switch to reading something that is written for more of a lay audience, it kind of makes you pause because you can't necessarily do that same quick scan and just pick out keywords in the same way. So absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of making it easier for people to scan so that they can decide whether this is worth it or not, right? Is it relevant to them? And I think that relevance is really what it is about. Like when you look at McKinsey 2025, Medical Affairs, Vision 2025, they're talking about 81% of physicians not being satisfied with the information received from pharma because of the lack of relevance and not being personalized. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that there's just too much information out there. So do you think that we should, as an industry, engage authors more in the development of these publication extenders?
I do think that we should be engaging authors in conversations around publication extenders. Ideally early on, maybe at the kickoff call, or maybe if there's some sort of publication steering committee that you're a member of, but I think that there's a need to have a conversation and really to communicate some of the data that's out there now about how valuable extenders are. In terms of getting more hands-on involvement in the development process, as you pointed out earlier, I mean, the authors are often also the consumers of similar literature. So getting their opinion, their input would be also particularly important.
Yeah. I was thinking about the planning of extenders as well, right? Like, and we have had some conversations about that together when we were presenting the ISMAP Academy together. But what have you seen mainly in your organization in terms of planning extenders? Is it more of an ad hoc, like the publication is already published and now we decide to make a graphical abstract, or is there more early thinking around this?
At least for my personal experience, my team, I think it started out more as an ad hoc type of process, but we're bringing in the discussion earlier and earlier. I think one of the roadblocks right now is that journals tend to be so different in terms of what they'll accept and even the format. So developing an extender very early on in the process before a manuscript is accepted can sometimes have a bit of a cost associated with it. So considering that, and when deciding how early to initiate the development of these extenders, is a consideration.
Yeah. So what is something that about the publication extender type of topic that you're excited about that we could maybe talk about a little bit longer?
Right now, a few things. I think the reach of publications, we're not hitting necessarily the audiences that we need to. And I'm thinking not just about physicians, but also patients, caregivers, the general public. I think that there's a great opportunity there. And we did speak earlier about the amount of information that's out there is just increased so dramatically over just the past few years. So presenting information in a way that's just easier to digest, maybe accompany a manuscript or something that is more in depth, I think is of particular use. We know that physicians are fairly strapped for time. We all are. But to be able to understand and digest key information quickly, I think is particularly important.
Okay. So we've been speaking a few times in this episode already together about the differences in how people consume content nowadays, including healthcare professionals, compared with in the past. However, publications are still kind of in this traditional format, and I understand that's here to stay. But I'm wondering what the impact is on the reach of publications. I hear more and more that doctors simply don't have enough time to read. Like 68% of them are actually overwhelmed with information, according to a recent survey. So what can you tell us about the reach of publications you have been working on, and how are you actually monitoring that?
Yeah, I think it does take quite a bit of time to digest a full-length journal article. And also, if you are not in attendance at a scientific congress, will you have access to that congress presentation? Or I know a lot of societies will publish their abstracts, but certainly not all. So even access to the abstract. I think that there's certainly opportunities there to expand the reach and also to encourage consumption of scientific literature. And I think that AI will be a really good opportunity to do that. It's still somewhat in its infancy, as we know, but assuming that it is able to pick out key content, key publications, and direct that towards the appropriate audiences and maybe summarize it is a good way to do maybe like a first pass for a reader to pick out, is this something I want to read in depth? Or what are the key messages? I think that'll be increasingly used over the next few years as we sort of work on improving AI capabilities.
Yeah. So I was wondering, are you using any metrics either around the publications or the extenders?
Right now, we're really relying on altmetrics. And I mean, to be honest, QR codes are a good way to access just views and how people are interacting with the content.
Well, that actually makes me immediately think about the engagement, right? Because that's always the thing with the metrics, like what are we measuring? Are these actually engaged viewers? So what are some things that we can do as an industry, in your opinion, on, I guess, presenting information in a way that is easier to digest?
Well, I mean, I did mention the AI summary. But also, I think certainly the use of more visual methods. And I mean, podcasts like this one, I think that you can certainly track podcast listeners, and it presents an alternative avenue for someone maybe commuting, or if that's their preference for how to consume content, to get important information.
It's funny that you bring that up, actually, because I came across some interesting data on podcasts, or actually on generally different formats and channels that we're using in the industry. And it was kind of compared between what we think is an industry and what HEPs actually think about it. And podcast was one of those things that is underestimated by the industry and clearly indicated by HEP audience that they would like more of. Actually, 72% of HEPs indicate that. But it is somewhere at the bottom of the list for most pharmaceutical companies. So I think generally auditory like formats have a lot of potential and are currently underutilized. And that means there is opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever tried anything like that?
I have not. But as you mentioned earlier, I think we really do need to be speaking more with authors who are also consumers of scientific literature to see what their preferences are. And I think integrating their responses into your publication plan is important. So I think that's something that we'd love to look into more, something our team has discussed. So hopefully down the road, we will be able to have some podcast or video content available.
What I find a really intriguing thought is that ultimately we're all people and we all have personal lives and professional lives. And I think even when you're a physician in your personal life, you're going to also follow the majority in how you consume information. And I think this is simply flowing over in their professional lives too. If you personally like to listen to podcasts, why wouldn't you want to do that for a professional topic? The same is true for me. I listen to podcasts both on the personal and the professional side, then also create one. And I think that is something we're maybe underestimating as well. And I think 62% of HEPs, they actually go to Google nowadays to just type like a scientific question. Well, often we're still thinking that the first location to go to is still PubMed or some repository, right? Like UpToDate or something like that. And I think that's just a really intriguing thought that ultimately we use the same kind of standards or behavior, display the same behavior, I guess is the better way to put it, in our personal and our professional lives. So if we simply look at like what are the trends outside medical communications, it's very likely they're going to also be trends inside medical communications.
That's a very good point. I'm curious to see where TikTok will go within the next few years in terms of being a resource for HCPs. I know that there are certainly some content producers on TikTok now that have quite a wide audience, but it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the future.
Yeah, I think it is an exciting perspective. And I know there's many, many CMLR related consequences to doing any of that, but it must be something that can be overcome in the longer term, because ultimately we need to catch up with where the rest of society is in terms of communications.
I would absolutely agree with you. And I'm really looking forward to seeing clear guidance on social media, for instance, hopefully within the next few years, because again, that's another platform that the majority of individuals use in their personal life. I think I saw some statistic recently about maybe over 70% of healthcare professionals were using some sort of social media. So I think that that is another area that we have lots of opportunity to explore further.
Absolutely. So I was thinking, with your experience, is there some kind of principle or inspiration that has served as your compass and that might inspire others that you would like to share?
Well, I mean, I'll say that something I've really enjoyed is when I've been able to attend conferences where we've been able to hear patient voices. I think that it's really wonderful and critical to keep that perspective front and center. And it's certainly a key motivator, I think, for what all of us do. My company started this wonderful initiative where they send out these patient cards that you can keep on your desk and just read a little bit about a patient's story and see a face and just be reminded about what we're working towards. And I mean, I'm a scientist at heart. That's my background, my passion. And I'm just really inspired and hopeful. I think we all work in different areas of science, of this industry. We might be working on competing products at times, but all working to move the needle forward on progress and to improve quality of life and longevity. And I just think that's a really amazing thing, just working towards advancing scientific progress in our understanding of the human body, of disease, to make people's lives better. So I don't know, that's something that means a lot to me.
Yeah, I really like how you put that. And I think nowadays, and especially when working in a large corporate organization under typically a lot of pressure, it's easy to kind of forget why we're actually doing this. And I think you're totally right. We need to remind ourselves of that, that ultimately it's about the patients. And the other thing that you said around sharing knowledge, even though sometimes you're kind of competing, there is no better way to put it for me than thinking about this actual podcast channel, because I've interviewed quite a few people right now, and people are so willing to actually share their expertise and their knowledge and their experience in this channel, which warms my heart, you know, because it's ultimately, that's true. You could just try to keep it secret. But I think ultimately, most people in this industry, they want everyone to grow and to get better at this and think about that patient ultimately. So it's a beautiful thought, and thanks for sharing that. Maybe one last question for you. So the way young people communicate is quite different than to previous generations. So I'm kind of thinking, what do you feel is going to be the biggest development that we're going to see over the next 10, 20 years or so?
Well, I mentioned earlier, we were at the start of maybe a new era when it comes to artificial intelligence. So I'm really excited to see what direction that takes and how that can be applied really from the start, from the research, early research stages, through how to best and most effectively communicate the findings of research to audiences. I do think that the younger generations are more interested in more visual and video style content. So I think that will be increasing with time. And I think that patients are more informed now, and which is a beautiful thing. And I think that it's our responsibility, and I think we've already started the process of ensuring that they are as informed as they can be.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Amanda. It was fantastic to have you here today in the Transforming Medical Communications podcast.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to talk with you today.
Thank you.
Transforming Medical Communications is brought to you by MedComms Experts. To find out more about MedComms Experts and how we create some of the most cutting-edge medical communications programs anywhere in the world, visit www.medcomms-experts.com. And then make sure to search for Transforming Medical Communications in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at MedComms Experts, thanks for listening.